This is an interview with Minnie Fort in Durham, North Carolina. It is February 10th, 2005, and we're in her office at North Carolina Central University. The interviewer is Geralyn Patterson, and this is part of the Spencer Grants Project on School Desegregation in the South, and will be used as part of the Southern Oral History Program at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The tape number is MF21005. Ms. Fort, can you tell me when you attended Hillside High School?
I attended Hillside High School 1964 through 1967.
So what was it like to be a student?
Well, really, let me just tell you. The class of 1967 was the class that actually spent the longest time at Hillside, because as Shepherd Middle School was being built, we didn't have a place to go. So they let the seventh grade of Whitted use the annex at Hillside. So actually, when I was in the seventh grade, I was actually a student in Hillside High School building.
I didn't know that.
Yes. So we used Hillside High School in the seventh grade. So I went there in the seventh grade. I also went there in the ninth grade, and then 10th, 11th, and 12th. So we actually had 5 years, the class of Hillside.
Okay.
Now, what was your question again, Jill?
What was it like?
It was comparable to nothing else in my educational experience. Every time, from the time I was little, knowing that I was going to go to the Thrill on the Hill was the highlight of my, I guess, years of puberty, okay, my teenage years, being able to say I went to Hillside High School. My mother graduated in the class of 1938 from Hillside, so it was a legacy that my family continued. My brothers went there, so I couldn't wait to be a part of that experience. There was such a rich history. The people in my church, the people in my community, the teachers that I saw on a regular basis were all Hillside graduates. And so my dentist was a Hillside graduate. My doctor, my pediatrician, was a Hillside graduate. So it was the ultimate. My librarian was a Hillside graduate. So it was the ultimate for me to want to be a professional and know that I could get whatever I needed from this high school experience.
Hillside. So basically what I'm hearing is the legacy in the community, the history of the community. You were immersed in it.
Right, it intertwined with everything that I knew, you know, from Hillside to being productive, from my church to my school to civic organizations. It was all involved in that. And everything went back to, what high school did you graduate from? And plus, it was the only high school for African Americans, so we had no other. Mm-hmm. So everybody that was black that lived in the city of Durham went to Hillside.
So how? Now this is still the Hillside that was right across
from the Central. Hillside that was right there.
Everybody. Did you grow up in this?
Three blocks from it.
Okay, so you were able to walk easily.
I was able to walk to Hillside.
What about people who live like in Walltown, East End? How did they get to school?
They have to catch the bus. The city buses brought them in. We didn't have yellow school buses. The city bus brought students in to Hillside from every corner of Durham.
Oh, okay.
As long as you were in the city limits and you were African American, during my time, you had to go to Hillside.
Okay.
So that's why we had the best band, the best football team, the best basketball team, excellent track teams. Everything was spectacular. So it was the ultimate.
Were you in any of those things?
Sorry to say, I could not become a cheerleader. I had a big mouth and everything and lots of school spirit, but I was not athletic enough.
Okay.
So I couldn't become a cheerleader, but I was in the pep band. Mm-hmm. I chose to do other things. I was the layout editor for the yearbook. I was a writer for the Hillside Chronicle. I was a member of student government. I was on the National Honor Society. And let me see, what else did I do? I think that was it.
That was a lot.
I think that was it.
So what was it? Tell me about some of the teachers, like your favorite, some of your favorite teachers.
Wanda Garrett was my speech teacher. And she was the impetus for me to become a speech teacher. First of all, she was eloquent in her speech. Mm-hmm. She was just always prepared, and she inspired us to speak well. Mm-hmm. We were not allowed to be lazy in our speech. Mm-hmm.
All right, Wanda Garrett, she didn't allow you to be lazy in your speech.
She didn't allow us to. We could not drift off into what we now call Ebonics or, mm-hmm. or colloquialism. Mm-hmm. She expected us to speak well, and that's what that was the standard. Mm-hmm. The expectation was there. We had to rise to it. Mm-hmm. Plus, she looked good. There was a standard of dress. Mm-hmm. And so she came to school dressed like what I wanted to be, a mm-hmm. teacher that was well-groomed.
Were there any others that made an impact on you?
Yes. Well, of course, there were Coach Blunt. There was Coach Blunt. Even though I wasn't an athlete, my close male friends were. And the standards that he set, not only for the athletes, but for those of us who were participants, who were observers. Mm-hmm. There was a decorum that you had to represent. Mm-hmm. There was a way you had to behave, mm-hmm. even as an observer of a track meet or a football game. There was an expectation, again, that we had to have. So the camaraderie that we had with our professors, with mm-hmm. our teachers, mm-hmm. Was one that was unparalleled. But as a student growing up in all black schools, it was something that I expected, mm-hmm. that I would be able to talk to my teachers mm-hmm. and have that kind of relationship with them. Prof Austin,
now
Mr. Frank Austin.
Prop or prof?
Prof, but we called him, you know, in the vernacular, which is prop. So I never knew it was prof until I saw it written, mm-hmm. but we just called him prop.
Now, someone I interviewed said that they called him prop because he was so old you had to prop him up.
I never heard that. I never heard
okay,
that.
Okay.
I didn't. I only went from hearing it, uh-huh. so it was always a P at the end.
Okay.
But as I saw it written, it was prof. To mean professor.
Mm-hmm.
He was feared and loved.
Okay.
The same with Frances Schuller wasn't feared.
Mm-hmm.
She was the dean of girls. And that's what we knew. These were our deans.
Mm-hmm.
The dean of boys was Prof. Austin. And anytime you were out of order, he would put you in check, whether you were on campus or off campus.
How did he do that?
One time, my friends and I decided to go to the College Grill to play hooky.
Okay, NC-55?
No, it was right here. It was called Paul's Grill, right on Lawson Street, not even a block from the school.
Okay.
And we were sitting in there having grilled cheese sandwiches, and when Prof. Austin came in, he rallied all of us around, get out of here, go to my office. We were fearful. We ran back to school, went to his office, and he made us clean the building. Now, we weren't suspended. He mm-hmm. didn't suspend us.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do degrading work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wash the trophy case, you know, so mm-hmm. students would see you out there doing that. Scrub the hall, mop the gym, go outside and rake, pick up trash. Those kinds of things that were demeaning to you.
So how is it that he was still loved at the same
because
time?
Because you knew he did it because he wanted you to be better.
Mm.
He had an expectation for you and you wanted to meet it. You did not want to fall out of his graces. You did not want, you wanted him to respect you.
Mm.
Because he made, I can remember this little thing about how you were to dress. He always dressed in suit and tie. Mm.
Okay.
Always suit, shirt, tie. the way you wore your hair, men, he had three C's, comb, conk, or cut it. So you couldn't just come with your hair anyway. There was an expectation just in your physical presence. So I think about, you know, like where our kids are now and how we allow them to, anything goes, mm-hmm. how they dress. When we come to NCCU, the expectation is that you're going to change that behavior. Mm-hmm. It is not allowed. The same thing they had at Hillside. Girls had to dress a certain way, and you would be sent home if you did not adhere to that. It was a dress code, unwritten, mm-hmm. but spoken. So there was an expectation for you in terms of your life, where they wanted you to go, regardless of where you came from, regardless of your background, regardless of whether you were so-called the children of the middle class, educated. There was an expectation that everybody had of you.
And what I'm hearing you saying is that was verbalized, but that verbalized. Was also kind of unspoken as well.
Unspoken. You knew when you walked in there was a way that you were to behave.
So it was basically the culture of the school.
The culture of the school.
Are there other messages? There are other important things to know about the culture of the school.
That you could be all that you wanted to be. There were no limits. Your success was unlimited. There were people there that would help you gain and rise to whatever level you wanted to go. Regardless of your resources and regardless of your background.
So then, because some of the research that I'm doing has painted Durham as Black Wall Street. Everybody had money, everybody was upper middle class. Was that the case?
No. No, because we had, like I said, our culture was students from all around, so from every corner. So we had students from the bottom, mm-hmm. we had students from every housing, public housing okay. development. So it not only were students, children of professors, college professors, and those who were considered maybe the Black middle class were at Hillside, mm-hmm. but also students from meager means, from parents, households where they were not as economically advantaged.
And so you feel like everybody got the same message?
Everybody got the same message. It was there. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to say everybody was always treated the same, because there could still have been bias.
Okay.
But people who were in vocational education
mm-hmm.
were the ones who built the houses. The brick masons who built the houses that line Lawson Street close to Hillside. Mr. Thornton, those houses behind that are on Lawson Street, adjacent to Hillside High School, adjacent to the track. Hillside High School students built those homes. The brick mason, the brick masonry classes mm-hmm. taught by Thomas Tupper.
Mm-hmm.
The carpentry classes taught by Mr. Thornton. These men were graduates of North Carolina A&T. The people brought their cars for our auto mechanics classes. The men that I know right now that are perhaps engineers started in drafting down in our vocational education department. So the men that I know that own businesses that are in my classes started with vocational education right here at Hillside, so distributive education. So those opportunities, it wasn't, many times people thought of it as a class difference, mm-hmm. whether you were college prep or vocational, but the ends, mm-hmm. we look at the end result mm-hmm. and where they went.
What I'm hearing you is that there was something there at the
school
for everybody.
Okay.
Regardless of your background. So, getting a sense, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people. Are there other things that you think people should know that makes the school so unique, that it's done for the community, why it seems to stir up such passion in the people who went there?
Hillside High School was our school. Mm-hmm. Anything that that was important to the community mm-hmm. somehow was also important or started at Hillside High School. The band, the Durham community supported Hillside Band wherever it traveled. So that passion was always there. It was a benchmark in terms of success. If you made the Hillside High School band, we knew that you were a spectacular band student. Mm-hmm. If you led the band as a majorette or as a drum major, even still now, people who were drum majors and majorettes years back still talk about it. They still come back to band alumni. So we still fight hard because that's a part of our school. Our football teams, if you were a member of the team, it was a sense of pride. So the 43 Hornets, those guys that come in our Hall of Fame, we still celebrate that. You just need to go to a Hillside game right now and see the number of older people that are there, whether their children or grandchildren are present, they still come back to see the games. My grandson is a drummer. And
he's on the drum line.
Yes, okay. And had thought about at one time choosing Southern High School because they were gaining a reputation as perhaps a rival to Hillside's band. Well, needless to say, my daughter and I quickly told him that he had no choice. He could not choose the school he wanted to go to. He had to go to Hillside. He was afraid he wasn't going to make the drum line at Hillside. Okay. And he didn't make snare drummer the first time out. He played tenor drum. He still made the drum line. But this year, as a 10th grader, he's a snare drummer. Okay. So he's been a part of Blue Steel and is proud of that. Mm-hmm. He's a quarterback. Mm-hmm. So he's proud of that. At Hillside, there is a pride that runs through that school that is a connector to the Durham community. Other schools are building that, but Hillside will always have that.
So
our blood runs blue and white.
A couple other general questions, because I'm getting, whenever I interview people, I feel the passion, the blue and white. Mine's getting blue.
Okay, good.
But you went to school during 64 to 67. Brown versus Board was in 1954. Did Hillside change as a result of the integration?
I had a white teacher, Ruth Gordon. The first time I had two white teachers. Okay. Ruth Gordon was my English teacher, and Ms. Scagnelli was my psychology teacher. First time Hillside staff had become integrated. So that was a big thing.
Okay.
That was a big thing for me. We didn't have any white students, but we did have white teachers.
You didn't have any white students in 1967?
No. We had no white students.
Huh. Okay.
But we did have white teachers.
Was there talk about white students coming?
Not during my time.
Were you able, if you had wanted to go to Durham High, could you have gone to Durham High?
You know, I don't even know, because it never crossed my mind. I never felt inferior at all. Mm-hmm. I never questioned the quality of education that I received. I knew that I was getting the best education that was available to me. So, and I knew that I could be all that I wanted to be. I wasn't worried about going to college. I wasn't worried about the SAT exam. Mm-hmm. I scored well on that. I knew that I was well equipped to do whatever I wanted to do. From my class, my friends went to Duke. Mm-hmm. They were National Merit Scholars. Mm-hmm. And every college throughout the gamut, UNC, we did what we needed to do. Mm-hmm. So I never felt that anywhere I was being shortchanged. So what Durham High had, I didn't miss it. And sitting next to a white person, having a white person being next to me in class, didn't validate me. And not having one didn't invalidate me. What my white teachers taught me, in fact, I didn't feel that they did anything any differently than from what John Gaddis did in my English class, because he certainly prepared me well in English. What Miss Willis did in English class that taught advanced grammar to students.
So do you think that there
moving on to the present a little bit, do you think that there are things that schools like Hillside did that were lost we integrated?
Definitely. As a member of the Board of Education, I tell people that diversity is an issue that somehow we're off track with what it should do. Mm-hmm. Exposing children to different people is always great, mm-hmm. but to think that by that mere exposure that is somehow going to increase their educational opportunity does not. I mean, Brown versus Board meant equal access. Mm-hmm. You can be in an all-black school as long as you have equal access and equal treatment and get the same quality of education. Okay. What's being lost with our schools now is that because we aren't culturally sensitized to each other in terms of cultures. We have many teachers that are afraid of African-American students. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they can't teach them if they're afraid of them. Mm-hmm. So what they do is, because they don't understand the culture, they don't care to understand it, mm-hmm. and they're fearful, they push them out of the schools. The high suspension rates and the high dropout rates, our children are not being challenged and not being taught. Their expectations are low. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that are lost in integration. There's an expectation that a black child has to have, mm-hmm. and they have to know that they can meet it and that there's somebody that's going to help them meet it and will not take less than that. And if they know it, they'll rise to the bar. Wherever, and I think what's happened is that we have, in our schools, expectations have been lowered for African American children. There's a mindset, they feed them pablum, mm-hmm. when they should be on solid food. Mm.
Do you think that there are things we gained?
I do. I think we gain access to a lot of things. I think our children have perhaps better equipment, better facilities. And exposure to perhaps other people, mm-hmm. Another way of processing information.
Do you think school integration could have been done better?
Oh, certainly. I think if we had thought about what we were actually doing, what this whole process of integration, rather than just taking a busload of kids over to another neighborhood, that doesn't achieve anything. It has to be, I think, choice. I think we could have had choice. Mm-hmm. And because people need to want to be, mm-hmm. in those places. And we need to have teachers that want to teach those children. And I think we have to deal with, first of all, desire. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to legislate morality, we can't do that. And we set many children up for failure because it was a federal mandate. Mm.
Do you have any thoughts on what schools can do to better educate black students now?
We have to have training, and when I say diversity training, I'm talking about training where you actually have teachers, students, administrators, and staff go through the same training of cultural competency and sensitivity, so that we understand what we come with, because understanding the culture is the first step. Why we're different and respecting and recognizing that difference. I think we, and part of that training has to be building a way of responsible communication to all people, and it has to be a part of our teacher education programs, and it has to be a part of our staff development, an ongoing staff development. It can't be a hit and miss. It has to be something that boards of education look at as a mainstay, mm-hmm. in their program, and a requirement in order for teachers to stay. Some of those who need to be filtered out, mm-hmm. need to be filtered out.
Last question.
What do you think is important for us to learn about the legacy of Hillside?
First of all, it is just that, that legacy is important. That tearing down that school was such a painful thing for most Hillside graduates. I have two bricks at my house, and because it was tearing down the memory, but also the fight of the Durham community to know that we would still have Hillside was important. Hillside will never die. That pride will never die. That legacy is as much in the Hillside graduates as their birthright. The thrill on the hill.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Brooks.